This is the MLWRadio.com network.
Welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Strigger, and I'm with Dylan, and I've got to say, I'm keeping up Dylan all night because, well, first of all, I would try to do this one day earlier, but it didn't work out due to some problems I had here at my place, at my parents' place, actually. And now we had some issues recording, so I'm hoping that this recording is going fine, but I'm actually not sure because I'm using a different recording device that I'm using normally. So Dylan, apologies for keeping you up all night, but I hope you're still fired up to talk about the pro wrestling.
Welcome to the night, Strigger. This is my home. You aren't keeping me up. I'm always up this late. You should know that by now. This is like a throwback because we used to always do our shows at 3 a.m. Central Time like we're doing now. And like I said, it's just like my home. So I have no problem doing it. Just it's almost like natural because I stay up to watch these Japanese wrestling shows. And now I'm staying up to record this show with you. As far as the technical issues or whatever, then, like I said, we've been through crazy things before in our lives, sometimes ranging into paranormal activities on this show.
Yeah.
If you remember some of our past episodes, some of our longtime listeners may remember that. But thankfully, everything should be good. We have lots of great wrestling to talk about. So no matter what life throws at us, you know, my catchphrase in wrestling is I turn a minus into a plus. And I think that's what we can do here tonight.
Like, what's his name now? What's Rockstar Spud's name? He said he's on 205 Live. Right. He said he's turning a positive into a negative. That's what he's doing. It was a great...
That's making it worse.
That was a great line, actually. I popped huge for that. But we're trying to do it the other way around. So again, if the recording is messed up, apologies. But I... Actually, Dylan and I are talking. And the sound quality is pretty fine when we just talk to each other, but the recording is sometimes messed up, so apologies for that. But let's just jump right into that stuff that we wanted to talk about here on our show. So obviously, with us doing this show at the end of the week, we won't do a full preview of Sakura Genesis, but we'll quickly talk about it. We did a show last week, and I said we'll be back next week, and the delay was due to me being in London and not being able to catch all the shows that happened last week and live. I was there for WXW in Progress, and I spent the entire weekend with Brother Mort from Denmark, so big shout-out to Mort here on this show. I really enjoyed this weekend with all the WXW in Progress action and all the guys... I saw again, most of them I saw 2 weeks ago at WXW at 16 Carat, and now I saw them again, which is pretty crazy if you think that we are just living in different countries. But yeah, that was a fun weekend, and I'm ready to talk about the grabs. And Dylan, I don't know if you saw the picture that I put up on Twitter. On Sunday morning when Mort and I woke up, we for a brief period, we watched DDT and All Japan simultaneously on their new streaming services.
Wow. And wasn't that a hoot? Hollywood, Strigger, and Brother Mort together again in London. One of my favorite cities. I love the women there, as we know, Strigger. So you have to give it up for that. You have to give it up for WXW, another great show they put on. Man, I wish I was you, Strigger. That's what I think about when you tell me all these stories. I wish I was in London and Germany. Where was the 16 karat finals held? Which city in Germany?
It's called Oberhausen.
Yeah, Oberhausen. I wish I was there too. All of these cities are on my bucket list.
Listen, Dylan,
so I was very happy.
Before WXW made Oberhausen their home, nobody ever in their life said, "I want to be in Oberhausen."
Well, that's... those were the old days.
I know.
That was back when the wrestlers had to say that German wrestling was the real kind, okay?
Yes!
The times have changed. You need to stop living in the past. Oberhausen is the hot spot of Germany right now. I have it on good authority.
I know. Yeah, we need to stop living in the past, but we'll quickly go back to this past weekend. But before that, let's just quickly look at what's up actually this weekend, then we'll move back to what New Japan presented the weekend before. Let's just quickly look at the fight card, which is it's called on the New Japan website, actually, for Sakura Genesis this Sunday. As I said, we're not going to do a full-blown preview because this show is coming out one day before Sakura Genesis actually happens. But there is something that we have on this card, and actually I'm very much looking forward to, of course, the main event, which is going to be Katsuhiko Okada versus Zack Sabre Jr. But then they put up some interesting other matches on this card. There are a lot of six-mans and there are a lot of tag matches on this card as well. But we'll have a IWGP Junior Heavyweight title match between Will Ospreay and Marty Scurll. They are going to do this again. They're taking their worldwide feud to the Japanese audience now again. And we have another special tag match with the Golden Lovers now facing Cody and Hangman Page after the developments that occurred on the Strong Style Evolved show this past weekend. So, should be a good show, both wrestling-wise and in the storyline sense, especially with the Bullet Club.
Yeah, the main event... highly looking forward to that. I think it's going to be a great match. This is the exact kind of opponent that I think Okada will thrive with, someone that brings such a different style and such an interesting match. The undercard, I noted that there's a lot of build-up going on to the Dontaku shows,
yep.
I think that they're setting up a lot of things on there. I'm really interested in the six-man match with Finlay Tanahashi and Juice versus the Chaos Team of Goto, Jay White, and Yoshihashi. I think that's going to set up three matches for the Dontaku shows. And when it comes to Juice and Goto, Finlay and Jay, and Yoshihashi and Tanahashi, maybe it's perhaps Tanahashi's last match before he challenges Okada for the title. We have the Young Bucks opening the show versus the Bullet Club team of Chase and Yujiro. So it's good to see the Bucks back in Japan, even though it's just an opening match here. And obviously they had some. They're setting up the Naito and Minoru Suzuki match, as well as the KES and Evil and Sonata. Evil back from injury on the show. So, and obviously there will be some sort of angle coming up with the Bullet Club and Golden Lovers match. So a lot of build-up. I was surprised because I thought that they would have at least that Goto Juice match on the show, but I think those shows next month could be even bigger than what we have here, because that's four or five title matches and big matches on the show they have there. But the main event here is really the big match, and the Golden Lovers is always a big deal with whatever they're doing. And we should see the next step in their feud, especially considering Kenny and Cody will have their match on WrestleMania weekend too. And I think this will kind of set that up well.
It's actually pretty funny that a sumo hall show for New Japan is setting up so much stuff for future shows. But they've split the Dontaku events into two events. Usually it's one show. But they obviously have to have main events for both shows, and I don't really see a heavyweight title match at Dontaku. So
nope.
We'll see what they plan for the second show. I'm expecting that one of those shows will be headlined by Suzuki and Naito.
Yep.
But the other one, I'm not sure. I don't know if Goto and Juice Robinson could be a main event. Maybe with the support of Tanahashi and Yoshihashi, could be.
Yeah,
but we'll see.
I think. I also don't forget they're also setting up another triple threat IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Title match, which we'll see again at Wrestling Dontaku, no doubt.
Yeah.
And this show will set that up perfectly with a triple threat.
Yeah.
IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Title triple threat match.
Awesome.
So good job on that. Yeah. Yeah.
Alrighty. So. Going back to last weekend, on March 25, For Japanese time, it was already March 26th, but on March 25th, there were three big shows. One of them was New Japan in the USA, and the other two were DDT and All Japan Pro Wrestling in Japan. And we're going to talk about all of these shows, starting with Strong Style Evolved from Long Beach, from the Water Pyramid, and we saw some nice shots of the building from outside. The building was packed and actually looked great on video, I thought. Mm-hmm. We are not going to talk about anything that happened, like the Q&A sessions or the meet and greet sessions and stuff like that, because obviously Dylan and I weren't there. I think there are definitely other people who have talked about this by now and who've written about this by now, so you should then go check their live reports out. We're going to talk about the matches that we saw on video and about the storyline developments, especially with the Bullet Club. And you know, I came back from London and I chose the Japanese feed because I just always watch the Japanese feed. But obviously, Dylan, for you, you had the Access feed live in the US, and so you watched it with the American commentary. There's been said a lot about the announcing that happened on this show, so I don't think we'll have to go over this again now here on this show. Just what was your impression of the Access broadcast?
Oh, awful. Not even just the commentary. The camera work was piss poor. They missed multiple shots. The production value was bad. There's people, sometimes they would go to commercial too late, which led to a very funny slip-up early on. It just felt like an amateur hour production overall, and not the kind of thing that, if you're a new viewer, it actually honestly got in the way of the show a lot, and I will be watching it again with the Japanese feed when I can, because like you, I usually watch the Japanese commentary, even against the usual English commentators. So I made an exception last month because I think that the wrestlers themselves are more interesting than the usual commentary, because I thought all, not Bad Luck Fale, he was not good. But the other three, Finlay, Juice, and Chuck Taylor, all did a great job. And on here, I just thought that Axis, I don't know if they didn't care or who was in charge of it, but it was really bad, but especially the camera work too. And there was multiple instances, even more than usual, because sometimes New Japan misses some stuff too. But this was the next level, and the commentary was really embarrassing, to be honest, just in terms of mistakes they made. And I think if you were a new fan of New Japan, you may like it, especially the main event. I would say that probably won you over no matter what. But leading up to that, I was having a hard time watching the show with some of the camera angles that they were doing and some of the production values, quote-unquote, that they had. So no two thumbs down on the Access feed for me.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, because I think with this show, they really try to set the tone for what's to come for New Japan in the US, as they announced that they'll be back in July with an even bigger building. But I think I think they will probably learn from what didn't really work at this show. I don't really know how experienced Access is with filming wrestling. So
yeah, that could be a problem right there. That could be a part of it. Hopefully they do better and get more commentary.
Because obviously, filming or shooting a wrestling event is much different from filming any other kind of sports. And especially with camera people. I always noticed that in Japan they have their specific Samurai TV camera crew, and to be honest, they hardly ever fuck up a shot.
Yeah.
And that's just experience, man. They'll probably improve by next time, and we can only hope for that.
Yeah, I definitely hope so. I will say, next time, if I have the choice, I'll definitely be going to that Japanese feed until they can win me over. Actually, really, the main draw of this was watching it with other people that were watching the English feed, which is why I did it instead of the Japanese feed, because normally I would just go to that anyway. Yeah. But if I do that, I may do it again, and I'll have another report for you, see if they improved any in July when they're in the Cow Palace.
Mm-hmm. So we are not going to go in depth with this undercard here because I didn't really. I saw the matches, of course I did. The first talking point I actually wanted to talk about is how heated the third match of the show, Lance Archer and Davey Boy Smith Jr. against Toru Yano and Chucky T was. I totally didn't expect this, but Toru Yano was so beloved by the American audience that they got behind everything that Toru Yano and Chucky T did, and by that, Killer Elite Squad looked like a big, big, giant heel team, like they are supposed to be portrayed as. But sometimes they don't get the heat that they probably want to achieve, but this time it totally worked out, and in the end, Archer and Smith got the heat on them because they beat Yano and Chucky T, and now they still have the heat behind them as they move along to Sakura Genesis and to other places, as well as they are probably going to challenge for the world for the IWGP tag title somewhere down the line.
Yeah, they had the perfect setup for it at Sakura Genesis, and like you said, Yano was so over in this U.S. crowd. He came across like one of the biggest stars on the show, you know, in a weird way, and they did a great job. This, to me, is Yano's perfect role. Yeah, I always have a problem with him when he's in these title matches situations and the tournaments and everything. I don't like that because you have to compare him to his. You have to compare his matches to the others in the tournament. And I don't think that's such a good... It makes everything lose credibility. But when you have him in these kind of special matches, in his own little world, sort of, I think it totally works. And the fans just totally bought into it. Chucky T, too, big history in California. So that team was super over. And I thought the crowd in general, I thought the crowd was pretty hot for most of it. There was a couple of down periods, but when they were into something, they were really into it. And, you know, even earlier on in the show, Goto and Juice got a big reaction. I wasn't expecting that from the crowd. So
yeah.
I think this crowd was really into it when it comes to that. But yeah, Yano, super over, KES. I look forward to their match. I hope the tag team division does good. I'm always hesitant when it comes to the New Japan tag division, but this was definitely a step in the right direction. Probably one of my favorite Yano matches, even if he still kind of did his same stuff. He had a little bit of a twist to it. Building up to the hot tag in his match too, which it has to be a rarity. So it was a fun match.
Yeah, as we said in our last episode, they are building stuff in the tag division while Evil was injured. He's back on Sakura Genesis now. There are a lot of teams that could actually challenge for the IWGP tag title, so we'll have to see which one is getting the shot or if there are multiple teams getting the shot again. And you mentioned the crowd was hot for most of the show, and I think they came for the New Japan experience, and they got the New Japan experience because in the first two matches, we had, first of all, a six-man tag match and then a regular tag match. Lots of tag matches on this show, and they got started with a match of Roppongi 3K against the team of Daniels, Kazarian, and Scorpio Sky, Sokol and Censored. And we had Juice and Finlay picking up another win against Goto and Ghetto. So, another team that could be in line for a tag title shot eventually. And then another tag match that was very interesting was Cody and Marty Scurll beating the Guerrillas of Destiny, Tama Tonga and Tangaloa, which I thought was very interesting that Cody got the pin over Tangaloa. And it all started that Cody didn't say, well, of course, we're not fighting. We are the Bullet Club. And he tried to put over Tama Tonga and Tangaloa. But they didn't want to hear anything of that, and wanted to fight Cody and Mighty Skrull. And very interesting again was that Mighty Skrull is kind of in the middle of all this trouble within the Bullet Club. Cody is always saying the Bullet Club is fine, but you can see it in Mighty Skrull's face that nothing is fine right now.
Yeah, especially when he turned on Cody at the start of the match.
Yeah.
The Guerrillas did not accept him, no. And so he ran back to Cody afterwards. Yeah. So Cody...
Man, he's just a guy trying to find his place, Dylan.
Yeah, exactly. He'll just, you know, he's kind of like he'll side with whoever's winning at the time, pretty much. So that's an interesting character. Cody, to me, though, I think he is doing some amazing heel work overall. In this match, and we saw it after the main event, I think he's arguably been the MVP of this whole Bullet Club storyline. And he did it again, cut a great promo. There was tons of poise, how he controlled the the crowd to get the heat he wanted.
Yes.
I was so impressed with him on the mic. And then some genius in New Japan decided Tangaloa should get the microphone. And he was not quite as good as Cody.
No, he's not as good as Cody and not as good as his brother.
He's not as good as most anyone on this roster based on this promo, I would argue. But it was a very weird decision because also the crowd was all chanting for Tama to get the mic. And he's a charismatic guy. He's cut good promos in the past, so I don't know what that was all about. But, yeah, Cody got the win here. Makes sense. Cody needs to build more than anything. And I think next time he'll be more of a main player because here he is on this undercard match, just continuing to keep the storyline heated, but got some of the best heat of the night. In terms of, actually, really, in terms of heat, he was probably the top heel of the company on this
side. Yeah, that's definitely. We had an eight-man tag match, Los Ingobernables de Japón minus Evil, beat Hiroshi Tanahashi, Kushida, Reisuke Taguchi, and Dragon Lee. Obviously here, great interactions with Hiromu Takahashi and Dragon Lee again. Fun stuff in this match, just nothing really that advanced, any storyline, just a way to get all these guys on the card.
Yeah, exactly right. Naito got a huge reception from the crowd here. He was very over to the U.S. crowd. And like you said, Hiromu and Dragon Lee did a great job. So that was the things that stood out in this match. Like you said, just kind of like a house show match. Get these guys on, keep the crowd happy.
Yes. Then we slowly turn it up because before the next match, I think it was before the match, that Rey Mysterio came out, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So he came out to a huge pop, obviously, too. He said that eventually he will wrestle for New Japan Pro Wrestling, and then he sat down in the crowd to watch the next match of Will Ospreay defeating Jushin Thunder Liger in just a little bit over 10 minutes. Thought it was a good match. At some points, it's really comedic how Will Ospreay is selling, for example, the Shote, like with a backflip. But that's what he's doing. And still made for a good match. Some of the antics that Will Ospreay just does just don't work for me. Others work very well, actually, when he, for example, sells a leg or sells an arm. I think he does that pretty well. But, just don't do a backflip when you're slapped in the face.
It seems like he has two ways of selling that leg, too. Either shout out an expletive or do a flip on his injured body parts, his style of selling. Man, I really am starting not to like him, and especially considering who attacked him after the match, I'm not excited about that decision. I think this match was good. I think Liger is someone that really brings the best out of anybody he works with. He's a master at making the other guy look good. I think that's one of his great skill sets, whether it's Will Ospreay or whoever. I think he did it again here, got the best out of him. You also forgot to mention during Ray's promo, he started off by saying Konnichiwa, which I thought was very funny. Ray's promo was actually, his presence on the mic was actually really good, better than I remember him being, but he had some corny lines in there. Like when he said, what's up, New Japan World, on there. I thought that was another good line, but so this was really to set up the next match. Ospreay cut a promo where he said that he was having the best damn matches in the world, and he basically set up Ray versus him. So Ray has two matches set up, the one versus Liger and versus Ospreay. So I thought that was interesting.
Yep. Luckily, Ray didn't say, what's up, New Japan Universe? So
that would have been even worse.
Yeah, so Will Ospreay afterwards said he has to go through Legends to establish himself, and that's a good storyline to go with, especially in Japan. And we'll see when this match happens. I'm not sure how long it takes for Liger to for Rey Mysterio to be back. So they're trying to put on Liger and Rey Mysterio again. Maybe that can happen in July when they're coming back. And Ospreay and Mysterio could be a program as well. But for now, we are getting another Ospreay and Marty Scurll match. As you mentioned, Marty Scurll attacked Ospreay after the match with his umbrella, kind of sending mixed signals, this Marty Scurll character is, right?
Man, it's like, how many times do we have to watch these guys wrestle in this division? There's so many guys on this roster, and this feels like the third out of 4 months we've been seeing them wrestle in some form. So I don't know. I don't know. And the problem is these guys aren't even over in Japan, really. So I'm really confused why they keep going with it, because it's not entertaining, nor is it very popular. And I think this is something maybe more for international fans. But why for the title? Like, I feel like you have Hiromu right there. And, you know, they have so many guys on this roster, and yet it's still just Ospreay and Skrull over and over again. It's like, I know people like Progress. I know you were just at their show, Striga. But I don't think these storylines really translate to the Japanese audience. And yeah, definitely not to me as a fan. So I hope this feud ends soon at some point, because they may have to end up facing again in the Best of Super Juniors. But after that, I hope this ends soon, is really what I was thinking when that happened. But Liger was good.
Well, in terms of Hiromu, they think that they can just heat him up again, and that it will just work out. Well, we've been over this a lot.
It's not just him, though. It's not just him, though. Like, there's a lot of talented guys in the division.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be Hiromu. I would like that, but there are others. I just don't know why they keep going back to Ospreay and Skrull. You know, we've seen what they could do. You know, and maybe you're a fan of it, but we've seen what they could do various times. You know, it's time to move on from this, I feel like.
I know. Let's move on here on this show.
Yeah, yeah, let's move on here.
Next up was the second best match of the show, with Minoru Suzuki and Zack Sabre Jr. going over Katsuhiko Okada and Tomohiro Ishii, obviously in preparation for the big title match at Sakura Genesis. I loved when Minoru Suzuki and Tomohiro Ishii went into each other's faces. That was an amazing moment, and people popped huge for that. Not only for that, but I was really surprised that people were screaming Katse Ninare as loud as they did here in the US. I know that a lot of New Japan hardcore fans went to this show, but I wasn't really expecting them to sing along this loud. But it served for a great tag match here with a heated crowd. And I really liked how Zack Sabre Jr. came off here as this giant dick, also flipping his finger to the audience. And I thought it was a great build-up for the title match.
Yeah, totally. I loved Suzuki and Ishii's exchanges here. I thought they totally killed it. Zack didn't get the reaction I thought he would when he came out. I thought he would be super over to this crowd, but he was more mixed. He wasn't as popular as someone like Suzuki or even Yano. But still, for the build-up to the match, like I said, I thought that they did a great job here. Like you said, second best match on the show for sure. And on the English feed, JR gave us his opinion that Zack should be the number one contender for Okada's title. So we'll see. I don't know why he would say that, but he let us know, and they did a great job building that up for the Okada-Zack Sabre Jr. match. And Suzuki and Ishii, I hope they can get a go at it for the IC title at some point.
Yeah, would be a great match for sure. We asked for the U.S. heavyweight title, Jay White defeating Hangman Page. I thought this match was too long, with 25 minutes, because it felt like they were running out of stuff that they could do after like 15 minutes. And they, in the match, they did a lot of dangerous stuff with Hangman Page doing crazy moves, especially in the apron region. I don't know. I'm always cringing when they use the apron for getting a crowd reaction, and it always looks so dangerous when you're jumping over the ropes and hitting the apron, or even when you're doing a suplex on the apron. I don't know. He also did his shooting star headbutt from the apron. But what I thought is, in this match, Dylan, and that's what I said in the preview, both of those guys were working really hard in this match, especially Hangman Page did, because he was trying to leave an impression. I'm not sure how much of an impression he left in to this audience, because a lot of this match just felt like they were so intent on making an impression that it took away from what could have been a better match story overall, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do get what you're saying. So you said you don't like the apron bumps.
Yeah.
So did you like or dislike when Jay White totally botched the German suplex and missed the apron entirely on Paige? Did that make it safer?
It was
or
even worse, I think.
Yeah, it was worse.
Yeah.
So I thought this match was completely awful for most of it, and they knew that it sucked, so they just decided to, like you said, to credit these two, there's no question that they did their best, and they worked hard. They took crazy bumps because the match was falling apart by the middle of it. The crowd was turning on it, but the crowd wasn't into it from the beginning. They were chanting Red Shoes right away, you know? They never even gave him a chance. But the match was very bad early on. There was some botches here and there. I think White looks totally lost in his character in the ring. He's such a disappointment in the ring. Never mind the character work, but just purely in ring. And Paige, to me, he tried so hard because he was really the one doing a lot of the bumping by the end.
Yeah.
But to me, that's not good wrestling when you can't connect with the crowd. You can't tell a good story. You can't have a good match. So you just do a bunch of dangerous stuff to get over. That, to me, is not good wrestling. But I could see why some people liked it. But I was not feeling this match at all. I thought it was really bad.
There's definitely
an
audience for this kind of wrestling.
Yeah.
Not in Louisiana, I know that. But somewhere else, I know.
Hey, like I said, listen, the commission has all of our best interests.
Yeah, I know.
But somebody needs to stop this match halfway because I was not feeling it. And I know but I will give them credit for working hard. I know everyone expects me to bury Paige after last week. But I definitely think this proved that Chase is the better of the two, if there was any doubt. But it's not all his fault. The other guy was equally as bad, if anything, here. And I think that was a bigger story because Hangman, I already knew like this kind of match was his limit. But White, I really expect more from. And I think it's a real shame what's going on right now with him because he has the potential. I've seen it before. He used to be great. He's like the new Kamatani of New Japan. He used to be great, but now everything's gone away. Everything he had is lost. And I didn't think this was a good match, but I will give them credit for trying. And they were in a rough spot, too. They kind of didn't really do their best with the card, the company, in terms of the matchmaking. Everyone paid to see the main event,
yeah.
And they were right before it. So, and like you said, it went way too long.
It was kind of a death spot, yeah.
Yeah, there was nothing good about this match, I feel like. Not in execution, presentation. It was bad ideas executed poorly. It would be the headline of this match, if I had to say it. And I think you really have to start asking some questions of Switchblade in the ring, in this role, because he is not over in Japan or America, despite this big push they've given him. But I don't know. I think they're going to take their time with him. And I have confidence in him. I want to like him. Like, I want to like him, Strigo. He was one of my favorite wrestlers. But I'm just not feeling it right now. I don't know what you felt about, because obviously, like I said, we were going to talk about Hangman no matter what. But I really think White was the one that let me down between the two of them.
Mm. Yeah, no, I already told you my opinion of what Hangman did in this match.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not feeling Jay White either right now. It's a very difficult spot. But the thing is, they put him in these difficult situations all the time.
I know. Yeah, just like the Tanahashi thing.
Yeah. They are expecting him to thrive when they just let him drive against the wall with his character, basically.
I know, and he's doing good. He's cutting. He has interesting content of his promos, I think. I think that's why a lot of people liked him at first.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really the opposite of what I thought when he debuted. I thought he would have trouble with his character, and the matches would be really good, though. But that it's really been more of the opposite, because I think he's finding himself as a character, but he's got a long way to go in the ring. Yeah, I think the guy who attacked him is way ahead of him.
That's,
in terms of it afterwards.
That's going to be an interesting match for sure. They already did it in February. With Jay White, he had just won the U.S. title, and he stood all above David Finlay at that point. But now David Finlay has made some progression. We mentioned it on our last show. He pinned Chucky T in a match too. He's getting some wins with Juice Robinson. He got a pinfall here too, only on Ghetto, but still a pinfall.
Yep.
And so he came out to challenge Jay White. I think for April 24, he made the challenge. Definitely for Currican Hall, for one of those Currican Hall shows on the road to Wrestling Dontaku. So that's going to be an interesting one, how that match is going to play out. They will obviously have to do a completely different match for the Japanese audience than they did here for the US title.
Love the spear that Finley hit. White, that
yes,
was cool.
Yes, definitely. Very happy that Finley is in a role again.
Oh, I'm so happy. I've been saying this for months, Trigger. He's been my guy on these shows. I've been driving the Finley train, and it's finally coming to pass. The guy's awesome. Even if he doesn't win the title, like you said earlier, I hope him and Juice can do something together. And Hanari as well. I'm telling you, that's the faction.
Yeah.
Those three can be together. They can rock the house. And I love what Finley brings to the table. I think he's a future star if they keep going with him.
They should. They really should.
Yeah.
But then finally, we had the big match, the special tag match, Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi against the Young Bucks, Matt Jackson, Nick Jackson. Almost went 40 minutes. And to be honest, I think people started chanting Fight Forever. And to me, that is kind of a ridiculous chant. But I was so much into this that at some point I didn't really want it to end, because the story, not only one story that they told within the match, but multiple stories that were told within the match, were so well executed. Just in the beginning, just take this one moment in the beginning when Kota Ibushi attacked Matt Jackson's back and Kenny tried to save him. But Matt Jackson didn't want to be saved. And the story arc then in the end led to Matt Jackson actually shaking Kenny Omega's hand while Nick didn't. And
wasn't it Nick that shook his hand?
Was it?
Yeah, I think Matt was the one that didn't.
Oh.
Okay. He had the belt on, right?
Ah, yeah, that's right. That should be right. Never mind. The overall storyline of this match was executed excellent, and just with Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi being together again, doing all their tag team moves and being on the same page, just as Matt and Nick Jackson are here. In 40 minutes, they did a lot of stuff, obviously. Not all of it went well. The only thing I saw when I woke up on Sunday morning was how Kota Ibushi missed his Golden Triangle Moonsault. And I've never seen this before.
Mm-hmm. Now, Ibushi had a rough match early on, especially, I thought. That reminded me, just to go back, though, before I just wanted to remember this. We didn't talk about this match that much earlier, but you mentioned the excellence of execution in this match. And it reminded me of another excellence of execution when JR must be a listener to this show, because he compared Hiroki Goto to Bret the Hitman Hart. And I too think they're very similar wrestlers in their capabilities. So I just wanted to put that out there. But as far as the main events,
yeah, sure.
The best there was, the best there was, the best there is, and the best there ever will be, Strigger. But besides that, like I said, I'm sure I'm not convincing you to tune into the English language version next time. But so this match, Ibushi missed multiple spots early on. Mm. He missed the Golden Triangle. And this was the best case of Axis's terrible production actually helping.
I know. Wow.
So that was great. Very lucky on their part. They zoomed in on Omega, totally missed a shot. But there were videos online of him missing it, which was, like you said, I've never seen that before. And right after that, he rolled back into the ring, and they were setting up their double team, you know, kind of flurry of moves. Omega would hit the Rolling Firemans, and Ibushi would hit a Shooting Star and then roll through while Omega did a moonsault off the corner. But Ibushi was too slow on the roll through.
Mm.
And he bumped heads with him. And that was really scary, because I thought he might have a concussion afterwards, because they bumped heads hard on the roll through.
There was another scary moment in this match when they did the superplex.
Yes. Oh, and Ibushi almost lost Matt in midair.
He almost lost Matt in midair, but he also saved him. There was a great tweet that Vinny Massaro sent out, how Ibushi, with just doing this minor step, probably saved Matt Jackson. Because they kind of lost balance on the top rope, which can easily happen, of course, in these situations. Mm-hmm. But Ibushi was very quick in his mind, thus saving Matt Jackson from taking a horrible, horrible bump to the outside.
You know, even when I wrestled, I was always surprised more people didn't slip from the top rope. Because when you get up there, it's like sometimes the ropes can have, you know, wet stuff on them or baby oil or something like that. It's really easy to slip, so I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often. But I'm thankful for it, obviously. Here it did. I think Ibushi wasn't all himself at that moment because that head bump looked real bad. But he did save him, so good stuff there. And he actually turned it around because I thought things started off shaky, but by the end, I thought this is going to be, I won't say the best match, but in terms of memorable matches with all the stories they had, I think this is going to be something people remember more than, maybe even more than any other match. And I thought this was truly an excellent last 20 minutes. And they did a great job, too, of, they took kind of what the previous match did with, because they had crazy stuff, too, but they built up to it so well.
Yep.
You know, it wasn't just for the sake of it. They did it.
They just picked up a lot of stuff from,
from
earlier, well, not earlier matches that the two teams had, but from earlier matches that the teams had for themselves, and also picked up storyline elements that also were important in the aftermath of the match. So as a storyline match, it was excellent. Very, very good.
And even the in-ring, I thought they really turned it up by the end, because they were doing stuff that were, they were innovating things before, like the spot where Omega had Nick on his shoulders for the one-winged angel on the apron. And then Ibushi leapt up to the top rope to do a new version of his German suplex, which looked great. Yeah, that was crazy.
And also, during the entire match, Kenny Omega, he was hesitant to inflicting pain on his two best friends in the world, except for Kota Ibushi.
Yeah.
And in the end, Omega pinned Matt Jackson with the he tried to pin him with the Katayoko no Tenshi, and he was hesitant about hitting the move because he knew it was all over then, but it wasn't. But that was still a great moment.
That spot was I don't know if that was controversial or divisive, because basically how that played out was he had him up for the one-winged angel in the ring. And he started to let it slide, like he couldn't do it, like you were saying. But then Nick put his arm back down and said, "Do it," and then he did it, pretty much. So, but then I think what made that moment, that would have been very cheesy to me if that was the end of the match. But because he kicked out, I thought that made it awesome, because it's like he's trying to prove that he's on his level. You know what I'm saying? He doesn't want the handouts of him letting up. He wanted to give him everything he had. And he kicked out anyway. So that, to me, made it awesome. If he had won that way, I thought it would have been cheesy. And the acting afterwards is definitely not Academy Award winning. I don't think anybody would agree with that. But it's nice of them that they would even try something like this and execute it this way. I give them credit for that, even though, yes, the acting was bad. There's no way about it. You know, "Come on, man. What's wrong with you?" That's what Nick said to Kenny Omega. And I was like, "Come on, man!
What's wrong with you?" You know?
Yeah, what's wrong with you? Is what I was thinking when you said that.
Yeah.
Nick, not the greatest actor. But that said, though, it still came across great. And I think if you're super into this storyline, then you would have loved this match. I think it was like a 5-star match of the year type of match. If you're just like me, you still had a lot to enjoy with it because it was still a great match and a great storytelling match. And like I said, ultimately, this is something you will remember by the end of the year. I have no doubt about that. And I think they totally succeeded what they wanted to do and succeeded in saving the show, quite frankly, in terms of the main event. And I think there was nobody who left home unhappy when they saw this main event.
Right. So that was the New Japan on Access Strong Style Evolved show from the Walter Pyramid. They're going to be back at the Cow Palace in July. And they are going to try to outdo what All In is trying to achieve with drawing 10,000 people while not being a WWE production.
Yeah.
Do you think they can?
Yes. I don't think there's any doubt they will. Well, I don't get over 10,000. I think they definitely will. With all of the buzz that this match had, I think they could easily be. I would be very, very surprised if they don't get 10,000 in that stadium or that arena.
Yeah, me too. I'm totally expecting that with all the hype and the buzz behind New Japan Pro Wrestling in the US right now. They had some media exposure on ESPN2, I saw,
Yeah, O'Connor's there.
Right. He was there. He's and so, so that should totally work out for them. We'll see how that goes on for New Japan Pro Wrestling in the US. But Dylan, why don't we take it back to Japan? There were two shows, one of them in Ryogoku and the other one in Saitama Super Arena in the convention center there. Which one do we want to talk about first?
Let's go, I think we should go with DDT first, because I guess we can talk about the comparison at the end, but I think let's go with DDT first right now.
Yeah, so I'm not sure how to talk about this show, because there was so much stuff on this show. Yep. So, to be quite honest, I wasn't into a lot of that mid-card stuff.
Yeah.
For example, the Jiro Kuroshio and the Super Sasadango Machine match. I can accept that it's comedic and it didn't only go 9 minutes. But, for example, and then the Colt Cabana and Joey Ryan match, it went only 10 minutes. But to me, this comedy that they do there, it always feels very long to me. On the other side, there was this Weapons Rumble, the five-way match. That I really enjoyed. I thought the comedy in that match was very good. For example, with Shinjiro Otani coming out as a weapon.
Yes.
And preparing the anus explosion with hitting everybody with a baseball bat onto their asses.
I didn't like that.
But, the show was very long, too. And that's always the issue with the DDT shows. I'm so lucky I didn't watch it live, because the show was 6 hours long. And, it was the 21st anniversary of DDT, and they tried to get everything that they do under one roof here with Ryogoku. They have these different promotions, and they try to get everybody on their show, which led to actually three, not dark matches, but under matches, where we saw some people just getting an appearance here on the show. Even Kenshin Shikano got an appearance on this show with Akira Joe. There was Tokyo Yoshi Pro action on this show. And then we had a gauntlet match, which even got Lidico on the show. Also, Ethan Page was there. I really liked the portion of the gauntlet tag match with Antonio Honda and Ethan Page beating Naomi Yoshimura and Keisuke Okuda. Thought those two, especially Yoshimura, has great upside in DDT. We had another Tokyo Yoshi Pro Offer match with Yoshiko Sakiakai and Suza Christie going over Miyu Yamashita, Maki Ito, and Misuki. I kind of have to get more into Tokyo Yoshi Pro, because these girls really seem like they can put up better matches by now. At shows last year, I wasn't necessarily as impressed as I was with them now, so I probably have to check out some Tokyo Yoshi Pro.
And Yoshiko is in this match too, which definitely elevated the in-ring work. Despite her attire in this match, but yeah, I actually like that match pretty good. You mentioned the Battle Royal. I like the Gauntlet match rather. I really like the part where at the end with Owashi and Hirata, there are matches with Akito and Shunma and Liliko and Waishi. Thought that was fun, and I was very happy to see my man Hirata get a win on the show. I was totally checked out of that Cabana-Joey Ryan match. TJP match was good. I agree with you on the Iron Man heavy metalweight match, because, like you said, this comedy stuff they do sometimes, it's very... you have to be a very certain kind of person, I think, and have a very specific kind of sense of humor for it to get to you. And we even saw that later on, where we had the Danshoku Dino and Great Muta tag match. Which may be the award for most unhygienic match in pro wrestling history.
This match went 20 minutes, you know?
It went 20 minutes.
And it was about this one spot. And it was about two spots in the end. It was about misting, and it was about the moonsault. But during this six-man match, they didn't even build to any of those spots. They just did. They just went out there and probably somebody said to them, okay, you have 20 minutes. Do something.
I could totally see that happening. Yeah, but I was happy that Ishii got to take the last moonsault that they built up to. That was the best part to me of all that. That stuff with the miss was just disgusting. if you ask me.
So the thing is, I read on Twitter that Danshoku Dino's ass just missed it, the Great Muta. But the spot was totally botched.
Yeah.
I don't know how they must have practiced it going into that match.
Why?
Right?
Why would you do that? I hope they might have, for all I know, but I don't want to envision this, so I'm going to play dumb. And it didn't. It was horrible.
It was horrible. I know. It didn't look good at all. Great Muta basically had to stand there and try to get misted.
Yes. Even if it had worked, it still would have been bad. But for me.
Yeah.
But I like the six-man tag titles match.
Oh, yeah.
With Yuki Ueno and Kota Umeda and Koji Takeda winning. I thought that was a really good match. That was the one match on the undercard that I thought actually held my attention for it. I give Kudo Sakaguchi and Takanashi. And I think it's a big win for these DNA guys to finally get one. I mean, I've always supported Yuki Ueno as one of the best prospects that DDT has, because everyone always talked about Higuchi, but I think he and Umeda can definitely carry on and represent to that level. So a really good match, and I think the two main events was big, you know. I think that's where business picked up, as a certain Oklahoma would say.
Dylan, I'm not over the six-man tag title match yet, because this was an absolute star-making performance for Kota Umeda, and everybody in the match was in. You could see it with Kudo Sakaguchi and Masahiro Takanashi, how happy they were for their guy. The overall story of this match was that Kota Umeda and Yuki Ueno, they had a rivalry in DNA, which also made its way to the regular DDT shows. And then there was this moment in Kurken Hall when Shuten Doji again made a defense of the Kiyori six-man tag title match and of the six-man tag title, and they said, well, there's nobody else to challenge us. And then Kota Umeda took the mic and he turned around, looked at Yuki Ueno and said, we are challenging, and Kurken Hall was exploding for that.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
I'm telling you, these guys are the next generation. I'm a huge fan of both of them. And like you said, they did a great job, him getting the fall over Sakaguchi. Like you said, that's a total star-making performance, because he was arguably the biggest guy on his team. And I think that was great storytelling in this match. Really happy. Like you said, I think it was just a great moment. And a really good match, too. It was a really good in-ring performances by all six men, I thought.
Yeah, definitely. And then the final moment of the match, with Kota Umeda hitting his Umeda driver on Sakaguchi, and the place went nuts.
Oh, totally. Everything about this match just worked for the crowd and for me. I thought it was a great match.
Yep. Yep. But, Dylan, my match of the year so far is the Weapons Rumble 5-Way Loser Anus Explosion match. I just had a great time with this match. Everything about this match was done great, I thought. I liked the Bailey and Mao team. I love the Shinsuke Nakamura entrance here.
Yeah, that was the comedy that hit me. Was the violin for Shinsuke.
And also Nakamura. And also I noticed when Shinsuke got hit by anything in the match, he always yelled "Yow!"
Yes. Awesome. What a great team, him
very,
and Nakazawa.
Very good callbacks to the real Shinsuke Nakamura. This guy is playing this character. He has this character down so well. It's amazing.
Oh, totally.
It's amazing. Totally. You could just put him on SmackDown, and I think a lot of people wouldn't know.
You may be right about that, Striga.
And
Yeah. No, you go on.
Okay, then we have this weird team of Yuko Miyamoto and Takao Soma, which kind of worked as well. But the two teams that did the best, that did the most for me, was Isami Kodaka and Fuminori Abe, and Zanshiro Takagi and Common Man Muninori Sawa. Especially because Abe and Sawa had their exchanges during the match, and we talked about
this one of the best spots of comedy As well.
Yes. And we talked about this on this show as well, that basically Fuminori Abe basically is this generation's Morinori Sawa. And they did a spot where they did this punch that both of them do, but Sawa obviously has originated.
Yeah.
And it just looked like father and son doing their stuff. But then this punch apparently or supposedly killed Morinori Sawa. And everybody was crying. That was sad.
It was sad. But Abe had a great weapon up his sleeve. Because he knew his own power. He knew his strength. And he called in three... What would you call these guys? Monks?
Yeah.
Three monks. And they all prayed. They looked to heaven. And the soul of Sawa, this great man who was welcomed to heaven, came back to us. Because we need him still, Striga. We cannot live this world without Sawa. So I was very happy. I loved that spot so much. That was so funny how they did it. I thought that was awesome. And I just loved seeing them. Like you said, their interactions were great. But also their comedy was great, too. That was my favorite spot of the match by far. Even though I loved Otani coming out at the end, too. And Shinsuke with the violinist. But yeah, what did you think of Otani's performance and what he wore? to this match,
it was funny. I thought,
yeah. If Sawa's the common man, what is Otani?
A very uncommon man.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's perfect.
Put it mildly.
Oh yeah, this match was awesome. It was very fun.
Yeah. So, well, it was just a fun time. Nakasawa in the end suffered the pinfall, but he ran away. Oh.
Yeah.
He ran away and avoided the anal explosion. And in the end, there had to be an anal explosion because this was the stipulation of the match. And the boss took it.
Man.
But then, of course, his tag team partner, common man, Morinori Sawa, he couldn't leave him alone. He joined in. So beautiful. So beautiful.
Why is there so much anal on this show? they love this. Like, this must be Takagi's like favorite thing. He is the true ass man of wrestling. it's not Billy Gunn. It's him. And he proved it again in this match.
I believe Ryusuke Taguchi has to be his favorite wrestler, right?
I think so. That could be a new faction, I feel like. If Taguchi ever gets released, he could go to DDT. Him and Takagi and Billy Gunn. All is a faction,
yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah. It'd be a good idea. But you mentioned the two main matches. For the KOD Tag title, Daisuke Sekimoto and Katsusada Higuchi are the new KOD Tag Team Champions. They defeated Naomichi Marufuji and Harashima, the ace team, when Higuchi actually got the pinfall on Harashima. And this one was a wild match with lots of swinging, lots of strikes, lots of suplexes, lots of big Argentine backbreakers, and just big man moves. I love the Sekimoto and Higuchi tag team. Finally, they put over Higuchi like I thought they should put him over. Finally, that happened in 18 minutes. I thought it was an excellent tag match, just very enjoyable, just sitting back and enjoying the wild ride that it was. Marufuji was excellent in it, I thought. Harashima was great. Everybody was there to put over Higuchi. It worked out. Great match.
And we saw it again with another DNA veteran getting a spotlight on this show. We mentioned the earlier six-man tag match, and this match was all about Higuchi, just like you said. They finally put him over. He took down Harashima, and I mean, what else can you say? You described it perfectly. This was a great match where all four men played their roles to perfection. I thought it was one of the best matches of the month, and that concludes a lot of wrestling that's happened.
Yeah.
I think it was a tremendous match and my favorite match of the night, and I love the booking of it too. So no issues at all here. I love the team with Higuchi and Sekimoto. And Sekimoto, again, he has to be one of the indie MVPs, not just in terms of
all
like pure... Yeah, not just of pure talent or match quality, because you can say what you want about that. To me, I think he's awesome, but you can say what you want about it, but just in terms of his what he means and what he does and all of the different roles he plays and how he puts people over, he has to be one of the MVPs here because he totally delivered again. And Marufuji again continues his resurgence resurgence with his great tag team title run with Hiroshima. This is a great tag team, and it did a lot for these titles, and made Higuchi all that much bigger for finally pinning Hiroshima.
Yep.
I really like this match, and it's a shame that, well, we know that Hiroshima and Marufuji, they could be team again. They don't need to be the titles team again, Hiroshima said. He said, much like myself and various Joshi wrestlers, they're going to be messaging each other online from now on. So you guys keep that up. I hope they can team up again once Marufuji's done with the Global Tag League and everything like that that's going on in NOAH. But until then, I'm happy they're
friends. The Champion Carnival?
And that too, and the Champion Carnival. After all that's finished, hopefully he can, this team can reunite, because I think they had a really great run.
Man, this show, Dylan, this show is all about friendship. Not only the Golden Lovers, the Young Bucks, Takagi and Munino Isawa, Hiroshima and Maro Fuji. This is really the show of friendship.
Absolutely. Lots of friends on this show. Lots of love. But also lots of star-making stuff going on in DDT here. So, yeah, just a great match.
Another good friend of Kota Ibushi was in the main event here. Mm-hmm. And he also gave a big shout-out to Kota Ibushi, because Shuji Ishikawa is also using the Kamigoe knee strike, because they developed it in training together. And I think Morton put out the tweet that summed it up perfectly. Whenever you need a big main event for your biggest show of the year, just call Shuji.
Yeah.
Because he will be there, he will be delivering, and he will also put over the guy that you want to put over. This match, Konosuke Takeshita defeating Shuji Ishikawa for his 11th defense of the KOD Openweight title, was the roundup to a storyline that has begun 2 years prior to this, with Shuji Ishikawa defeating Konosuke Takeshita to end his first run. And so I was completely 100% sure that Takeshita was getting his win back here, while people were kind of doubtful, because after the D King Grand Prix earlier this year, they said that the one winning this Grand Prix would be a key player for DDT this year. Some people figured that they may go with Shuji, but it was just to distract from what was very obvious, that Takeshita was going to be put over in this match. Lots of great callback spots to their prior match, even with Ishikawa trying to get the same move in that he won the title with, the Giant Slam. Mm-hmm. Takeshita fighting back again against Ishikawa, and then getting the win with his German suplex hold. I liked the match, but I didn't like it as much as the tag match. Still thought it was a good main event. But you know what I thought during this match is, especially that we talked about the New Japan Strong Style Evolved show before, an US audience, especially in this match and after this match, would have turned on Takeshita.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can definitely see that. I mean, it really, these types of long title reigns are hard to pull off for any company. But I really agree with you about the match for the most part. Like you said, I think that tag match was just spectacular. But that's no slight against this main event here. I think they both did a great job. Like you said, Shuji, he's one of the most consistent and reliable men in all of Japanese wrestling.
Yeah.
And he continued it here. They really brought out everything. He gave Takeshita everything. I can totally see why you would say that they would turn on him here, because he had the Kamigoe. He had the Fire Thunderous. He had Splash Mountain.
Yeah.
He had a Fire Thunder through the table. Mountain,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He went through the table with the Fire Thunder off the apron.
Oh, that was a bad spot.
Yeah.
Because Shuji, when I saw the match, I wrote that Shuji may have hurt himself, and people were asking why. Well, because Shuji went leg first through the table, and there was nothing to save him.
Yeah.
That looked painful.
Oh, it probably was. Those are always the bumps that I hate the most, are like when you land on your backside and things like that, because that's just so painful. I don't think people really understand what it's like. Imagine, like, if you just stood up in the air and jumped and landed on your butt, that would hurt a lot, like, even in your room. So imagine flying off the apron through a table onto it, you know? And especially for a guy his size, taking that fall wasn't fun, but they gave Takeshita a lot. He survived a lot, And Takeshita used his signature offense, his suplexes, his lariats, and he finally gave him the cross-armed German suplex, but he kind of lost his grip for the pin. But yeah, so he was able to get him again to give him the another suplex, and he got the win. It was a really strong match, I thought, for the main event. I know a lot of DDT fans are not in love with Takeshita, but to me, I've liked all of his main events that I can remember and all of his title match. I really enjoy him as an in-ring performer. You can say what you want about his personality and all of that and his fit as the ace of DDT, but in terms of a purely match-by-match wrestler, I think he's been one of the more consistent people in Japan, and I really appreciate what this run has done, though I can definitely see it getting a bit long in the tooth now, and I don't think the fans have taken to him. Even in DDT, have taken to him really as that ace they would like.
Yep. Yeah. But that wasn't the end of the show, actually. We thought it was.
When he slipped on the turnbuckle.
Oh, yeah. We thought it was. I was wondering if he was just doing the Otani or if he really slipped. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure if it was on purpose or not, but he laughed about it. So, everyone laughed. That was funny. That was a good moment. He was good-spirited about it.
Yep.
And that was good. I like that. But, yeah, then what happened next?
The credits played. Not the credits played, but Into the Light played, which is the basically the DDT theme song, has been for a long, long time, and it always signals that the show is over. Mm-hmm. Brother Mort went to the bathroom. He was going to shower, and then it happened. Shigehiro Irie came back, and when Mort came back from the shower, he said, "Oh, I fucked up." Yeah, so Shigehiro Irie. It's a difficult story to really digest, because apparently what happened is that Irie was having this tag title run with Katsusada Higuchi, and there are rumors that Irie just left Higuchi, and for reasons that maybe Irie didn't get what he wanted, and he hasn't been on DDT, he hasn't been in the D-King Grand Prix, he hasn't been on a DDT show since December, and he hasn't even tweeted. He went totally black on social media, and now it seems to be that he's back, and apparently what is rumored is that his punishment was that he was off shows for a couple of months now. I'm not sure. There is a blog from Akito that I was pointed to, and Akito brought it up in his blog, and apparently there was not, at least not completely, a storyline. I'm not sure how far they are going with this, but definitely Shigehiro Irie is back, and he is now taking on the aforementioned Akito in a special singles match on the Sunday that Sakura Genesis is happening as well, April Fool 2018 for DDT. What's your take on Irie making his comeback?
Yeah, like we said, even in this, when Akito came out, a lot of his promo was basically saying all of that about him not getting what he wanted and how he kind of runs away when he doesn't get what he wants. And because Irie was basically just here to challenge Takeshita, but Akito didn't like that he's just coming back here in the storyline, obviously. But so they're going to have a match now, like you said, and I think that... I think that Irie will win, and I think he's a logical next opponent for Takeshita, because obviously I think everyone kind of pointed out that it was weird that he wasn't in the D-King tournament. You'd think he'd be a logical person, but in terms of him going dark, I don't know whose idea that was or what the true story behind that is, and we may never know, but I still think that Irie, you know, he's another one of these guys that DDT fans haven't completely taken to. A lot of that due to his feud with Harashima and how they kind of book Irie sometimes. I feel like he's never really got that big win yet in DDT.
Now Higuchi has.
Yeah. See, isn't that something? That's another storyline that kind of play off of there. I would love to see that match down the line, Irie and Higuchi in some kind of match. And here Irie had a different vibe to him. In terms of how he came out of the ring. Yeah,
totally.
Completely different. Yeah, completely different style. Comes in with the jeans.
Black shirt.
Like a man's man. Yeah, black shirt. He's a man's man now, Strigo. He's no more of this comedy stuff.
No, not a little boy anymore playing around.
Yeah, now he's ready to be a big lad. Officially.
You know, I'm all for this. If there is a benefit from this and DDT can pull it off, I'm all there for it.
Yeah, me too. Why not? Like, you know, why not? Because of some petty bullcrap like that?
Right.
There's no reason to worry about that. Just let him, let's see how this goes, because he's got a new attitude, he's got a new storyline, a new, you know, I think this thing with Akito could be heated. I think people can believe in it. And I want to see how that match goes. I'm very interested in that match and what he's up to. Irie, personally, what he's up to next. And I think it could be in a couple of different directions. And when he does get that title shot, he's going to be a very interesting challenger when it comes to... Because I think at this point, they have to be thinking about an exit strategy for this Takeshita title reign at some point. You know, and if he gets hot with this more maybe heelish character... Why not Irie? You know, you finally get that big win.
You know, the perfect exit strategy for Takeshita's reign is still him losing the title to Tetsuya Endo.
Yeah.
That is the exit storyline they should go with. I'm not sure if anybody else would really be accepted.
Yeah. I think that makes sense. Endo... He's right up there. They obviously have their generational rivalry, I think. But you could see something like that, maybe them shying away from it for that reason, if they wanted to, because it's such an obvious generational rivalry that I think everyone expects them to face again down the road and win. And that would almost make it a little too obvious at this point because the reign's gone so long.
But in a lot of cases, the most obvious storylines are the best because
But not all bookers think like that. Like I said, yeah, sometimes that's true, but that's not how a lot of bookers think sometimes, especially in DDT's world, you know. But yeah, Endo would be fine. I really like what Irie brings to the table. If they want to give him some big wins, maybe not even the title, but if they could give him a big win, maybe finally beating Hiroshima, you know, at Peter Pan this year, I think that would be a great direction too. You know, so you never know. I think... Takeshita is probably losing that title at Peter Pan, though, this year. So, like you said, I could see that with Endo. I could definitely see that with Endo. But I was really feeling this return from Irie. I thought it came across really well.
Yep. Same here. So, this was the one big show on March 25 in Japan, in the Tokyo region. The other one, well, Saitama is basically the Tokyo region as well, even though it's a different prefecture. It's very close to Tokyo. All Japan Pro Wrestling ran their Dream Power Series show that was live on All Japan TV. First show that was ever live there. They drew 2,257 fans in Saitama Super Arena Convention Center. I thought this was a bad show.
Yeah.
It was in multiple ways, especially because it was the first show that was live on All Japan Pro Wrestling TV. And also in other aspects of the show, payoff reasons and storyline reasons, match quality wise, this wasn't good.
I think when you look at this show, there are so many things that you could say could have went better. And some of them were with the matches themselves. Some of them were with the booking, which we'll talk about. And a lot of it was with the crowd, too, in some ways. Because when I look at these two shows, we talked about the comedy and DDT not really getting to us. But that show, even with All Japan, even with its first show on All Japan TV, the DDT show felt so much bigger than this show, I feel like. And a lot of that was for the crowd. And I don't know why that was, because we had this huge main event. We even had a title change after that. So, but to me, it just felt like a way bigger show on DDT than what we were presented with in All Japan here in Saitama. And, you know, you could look up and down this card. It really was kind of a questionable card leading to the main event, as is. And I think we can just talk about it now. You know, a lot of these undercard matches were more... kind of gimmicky. We had Carbell Ito in the opening match, and a who's who of very random people, actually. Poor Maruyama and Sato.
Yeah, Yuta Takayoshi, Atsushi Maruyama, Naoshi Sano, Keiichi Sato, and Kabel Ito beat Masakado, Ishikiri, Revlon, Takashi Daimonji, and FG Mask, the Land's End quintet.
Yes. Land's End has a bright future with those guys as their building blocks. But yeah, Yoshi won. The next match was all old guys, and great. You know, I like these old guy matches for what they are, because I think a lot of times in these undercards, you don't get the greatest of match quality, and All Japan's at least has some charm to it, I think, with these old guys.
Yeah, they are there for Fuji and Ultimate Dragon interacting.
Yeah.
That always is fun.
And Kotaro Suzuki as well, who's an honorary old man.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just some good stuff there. Not good stuff, but it was fun. And like I said, you know, all undercards have these kind of matches. Then we had Iwamoto and Josh Bodom making his debut in All Japan. What'd you think of Josh here with the chain?
Oh, I thought that this match for the 8 minutes that they had was a good match, because they interacted well. They started off with a nice chain wrestling exchange, and then Koji Iwamoto got his judo in and also worked over Josh Bodom's leg. Yeah, I thought it was a good match. It was a nice little undercard match here.
Yeah, 8 minutes, nothing wrong with that. The Koko no Geijutsu won the match for Iwamoto. The crowd was not feeling it that much, though. Like I said, I think
it's difficult. You just throw out this Josh Bodom guy here on this card, and he's supposed to get over with a crowd that has never seen him. That can work, but not in an environment like this, where you have this weird building to begin with.
Yeah.
And you have a big show, and you have to connect with over 2,000 fans. No, doesn't work.
Nah, but the match was okay, though.
Yeah.
Nothing. And then we had possibly my second favorite match on the show, which was under 5 minutes, which says a lot about the show, with Nomura and Kai versus Hino and Yoshitatsu. And man, Hino and Nomura's interactions were awesome. I can't wait for their Champions Carnival match. And the other two did good, too. For a sprint match, there's nothing wrong with this. This match ruled for what it was.
Exactly, totally did. I really like this one too, especially I always put over Yoshitatsu on this on our podcast, because he isn't bad anymore. He played his role perfectly here, as did Kai. But overall, this match was about establishing Yuji Hino, and it worked out perfectly.
Oh yeah, that power bomb he hit on Nomura, I think, was great.
Yeah,
as I thought. Yeah, so he rocked it. Hino's going to be a stud. And I think their match could be really a sleeper match in the tournament when we've seen these interactions. And Kai and Yoshitatsu should have a good match, too.
Mm-hmm.
So Yoshitatsu's fine. I thought the others really stood out, though. I can't wait for that Hino and Nomura match. Oh, then we had our favorite match on the show. I know it was. Hagure IGF International Special Six Man. So, what a match we had here. Oh,
when did everything go wrong for Katsuyuki Fujita? When did he turn into Atsushi Onita 2.0?
When did Freddy Krueger join IGN?
Freddy Krueger, he's on all of these FMW / Onita / now Fujita shows. He's on all of these shows. So, but it wasn't explained, was it? He was just there and was interfering in the match.
No explanation given to this. There's so much wrong with this. I can't believe they've wasted the hate speecher, as some people know him as. One of the biggest studs, I thought, on the roster after coming off of that junior tournament. And now he's here messing around with Freddy Krueger. And Sato, too, one of my favorites of All Japan, Suwama. Why are these guys in this feud? Like, what sense does this make? This isn't even building up to any Champions Carnival matches.
No, it's building to an All-Asia tag match, Dylan.
Man, this sucked. This was the worst match out of all these shows we're talking about. This was by far the worst. Even worse than that Hangman or that Joey Ryan match. this was worse than all of them, I thought. I hate this angle so much. Even Kendo, Big Kendo, cannot save what has happened to IGF. Inoki cannot be happy seeing this. I feel like he must think this is disgracing the legacy of the great IGF,
okay,
seeing these three.
I might as well throw this in here now because you just mentioned it. So apparently, not apparently, because this happened.
Yeah, it happened.
In the IGF Twitter, somebody took over the IGF Twitter. They locked the Twitter account up and they blocked all of their followers, including Simon Inoki, who, at least that's what we know, is still operating IGF. And IGF isn't even Inoki anymore. Inoki is now running his ISM brand.
Yep.
And apparently somebody bought Inoki's IGF shares. And now IGF is, I don't know what the I stands for, actually. Is it now in International Genome Federation? Or what is it supposed to be? I'm not sure. I'm just
maybe worried. It's a Siberian investor, Igloo Genome Federation.
The funny thing is, there's a text on the IGF homepage, and the logo, the IGF logo, is now just saying Genome Federation.
Now it's just GF.
GF, yes.
Well, not a good investment by the new owner.
And apparently, the guys, Katsuyuki Fujita, Nosawa Rongai, Kendo Kashin, Shinya Aoki is in there too, as well as Keisuke Okuda. Keisuke Okuda split from IGF to join IGF International.
Whoa.
Which, I know it's hard to follow and to understand, but that was that is what happened.
Hey, remember when they had all that new stuff going on last year?
Yeah, I know. That was great.
We were trying. I love that. I love the shows. But remember how when we tried, because I remember us trying to like translate, and there was so much legal stuff that we couldn't understand, even translating.
Yeah.
I wonder what the translations would look like with this situation.
Oh god, no. I don't want to even try.
Get the show on.
So, and now apparently those guys that I just mentioned think that they can use the IGF name to rebrand what formerly was Tokyo Gurentai. Because they're having a show on April 4. It's the Hagura IGF International Launching Business Show. I just want to point out one match on this show, Dylan. The card, I have the card up on Purlove, but I also have it up on my Twitter. I want to point out one match. It's going to be a special six-man tag match. Fujita, Yuko Miyamoto, and Masashi Takeda take on Kaz Hayashi, BB Hulk, and Shinya Aoki.
A dream match. I mean, that's a natural trios right there with Aoki, Hulk.
I know.
Yeah, so... I wonder if they'll ever rebrand Secret Base with this under this IGF.
That would be great. Spectre.
Yeah, exactly. That's the only thing I'm looking forward to.
Genome Secret
Base. What about this match, though, that you thought,
sucked.
The six-man match? Yeah, thank you. I'm glad you agree with me.
But I wasn't expecting it to be anything else.
That's true.
You know? Ah, yeah. Well, and in the end, Okada got beaten by Nosawa. Was basically just an infomercial match for the IGF International thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe they can rebrand. Maybe they can go away.
Yeah. All Asia Tag Team title, Takao Omori return match. Jun Akiyama and Yuji Nagata defeated Manabu Nakanishi and Takao Omori, the team of Wild Child. With a wrist touch exploder from Akiyama on Omori. Went 15 minutes, almost 60 minutes. Man.
Yeah.
This match basically was all about Jun Akiyama trying to pin Takao Omori, and that was it.
Yeah.
Omori was trying to get back into action after he missed a couple of months now. He looked decent, I thought, but you will always look decent when your tag team partner is Manabu Nakanishi in this state.
Yeah.
Manabu Nakanishi, he fucked up a horrible plancha.
Oh, yeah.
That looked
bad.
I was really feeling bad for Akiyama and Nagata because they were lost in this match.
Yeah, this was a bad idea executed poorly. Putting Nakanishi in the 16-minute match. Man, what about my Get Wild? That's what I wanted. Mm-hmm. Why are we having to sit here and watch these Nakanishi matches? Yeah, but you're totally right. I thought Omori did a great job for having to carry Nakanishi in this match. It wasn't a great match by any stretch of the imagination, but I liked what Omori brought to the table. I liked his storylines with Akiyama and Nagata, and Nakanishi looked horrible, so, and that really drug everything down, but it was not a great match at all. Just to get away from this terrible Wild Child team, before this, we had Jake Lee come out, and he announced that he was coming back on the 24th of May at Corcoran Hall. So that's cool. That's way more entertaining than any match on the show so far, except for that 5-minute Kai and Nomura match that we had.
Yeah.
Speaking of boring matches.
After the match, first of all, Katsuyuki Fujita and Kendo Kashin came out to celebrate with their former Team Japan teammates of Yuji Nagata and Manamu Nakanishi. Fujita shaking hands with Yuji Nagata is everything that's wrong about this. Nagata was thrown to the wolves by Antonio Inoki in the early 2000s, to do this MMA. And Katsuyuki Fujita was the one that Inoki thought would be the great star, and he never was. And now these guys are shaking hands. It was just wrong for me.
Don't you understand how successful Team Japan was?
I know.
In 2005?
Mm-hmm.
This was huge, okay? Huge. Actually, it was probably one of the darker periods of New Japan when this was happening. And especially probably the darkest period for Nagata, because, like you said, that Inoki and truly one of the worst booking decisions in history decided to put his world champion against Mirko Krokop in his first professional MMA fight.
And
Fedor. So probably the two top MMA fighters in the world you put a rookie in front of. So great job, Inoki, doing great work. And like you said, Fujita was the one that benefited due to his MMA prowess. But, yeah, this totally sucks, like this whole IGF angle. I hate this angle. Some people on Twitter were saying that it was good, and I don't know how.
World this was good. I have no idea.
No, it was not good. It was very bad, actually. Very, very bad, I would argue.
After this, we had the All Japan World Junior Heavyweight title match with Atsushi Aoki defeating Shuji Kondo in 18:35. And this really was the match where I flipped my lid. So, to go back, Shuji Kondo comes back to All Japan. Main events, the first show of the Junior Battle of Glory tournament in Korakuen Hall with Aoki. He goes over, and then he goes on a rampage, beats everybody in like under 10 minutes, even some people under 4 minutes. He's this big threat, wins the tournament over Koji Iwamoto. And he comes in here as the challenger, having defeated Aoki before and being this giant threat to the title, looking huge. I'm not sure how he made the weight limit. And then he loses a match that Atsushi Aoki completely dominates.
Well, I guess this is how they wanted to book the Wrestle One guy in All Japan.
Absolutely baffling to me.
It was a really boring match, too. It wasn't even a good match, I would say. Very disappointing, in fact.
So Shuji Kondo got some hope spots in there, but he was the wrong guy to get the hope spots.
Yeah, the monster. This is the one that the underdog in this match against Brett, the second Bret Hart reference on this show. With Aoki again and the mask, he should be an IGF with this look that he has going on. That's what I thought of. I think him and Kashin could be a tag team, the way they're going.
Oh, they are definitely building. That's the thing I'm going with now. They are definitely building to an Atsushi Aoki versus Kendo Kashin mask versus mask match.
Oh, man. That could be huge, Striga. Mm-hmm. It could be huge. But Kashin's a heavyweight now, so Aoki would have to step up. to do that, I think.
Who says that Cashin is a heavyweight?
He was in a champion carnival before.
Yeah. let's not talk about this again.
Okay. Let's just not talk about IGF again. This show, I think, would be the best idea. But hey, we had more excitement coming up, Striga. What happened next on the show?
Ruji Sai and Dylan James beat Zeus and the Bodyguard in 18 minutes when Sai pinned Bodyguard. Yet again, the tag title switch. Didn't feel anything. I don't know. I didn't feel this match at all.
I love these titles. I feel like All Japan wants these to become the new junior heavyweight tag titles. And just make sure that nobody thinks they're worth anything with how they booked them. This is horrible. Man, what happened to my Suwama and Shuji Ishikawa team? Why, we had to suffer through this crap instead? This sucks, man. I don't know. Like I said, I don't understand the booking at all of these tag titles. It's like, yet again, we have this. I think it's been six straight times somebody's had their first defense loss. And that's not good when it comes to the World Tag Team titles. The match wasn't special at all. It went way too long again. I think this was like 18 minutes.
Yep.
And, yeah, I don't know. I'm not feeling the Lands End team guys on this show, to be honest with you right now. But, and it really didn't build up that much for the Champions Carnival either, because they're all in different blocks. You know, it's like Sai and Zeus will get a match, and Bodyguard and Dylan James will get a match. But that's about it. You know, I don't know. I don't know at all about this title match. It wasn't a good match, though.
No. Well, main event of that show, Kento Miyahara beat Joe Doering in 18 minutes. What was your impression of this main event?
Well, first of all, I cannot wrap my head around the booking of this company again. I thought Joe was doing an awesome job as champion and had a lot more gas left in the tank, much like Miyahara's first title reign. I think they're having a habit of just ending reigns too early, I feel like. And I guess it's better than in October when they had like three title changes in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But the match, it was good. I thought, you know, the crowd was into it. They finally woke up for Kento. I thought he was the most over person on the show.
Oh, by far.
Yeah, definitely. So I don't have a problem, a huge problem, but I didn't like the title change. And the match was good for what they did. I think Miyahara did a great job. And Joe did a great job in their role. And they kind of had set roles, Joe and Kento. And they played it off, and they worked the crowd well. But I just wasn't feeling the title change. That was my problem with this match. Not the match itself, but the title change.
The match itself was good. So they started slowly. They built off Joe Doering having these dominant title defenses. He beat down Kento all the time in the match. And he continued to beat him down. Then finally, Kento was able to throw in one of his knee strikes. And he named the knee strike that he countered Joe Doering's, or that he prevented Joe Doering's great crossbody, running crossbody with. He named the move, Joe Is End. That's the name now. Not Joe's End, but Joe Is End. Excuse me?
Close enough, I said.
Yeah. So, I liked how Kento came back in this match, but when you think about how dominant Joe was in this match, I think they ended it too early and too abruptly.
Yeah. The shortest match of the three main ones, too.
Mm-hmm.
It was short, the tag and the junior heavyweight match.
Yes.
So, I definitely think that's true. I think they had a little bit more gas left in the tank of this match itself on top of it. But for what they did, I thought they did a good job.
You know, but then, on the contrary, when you look at the audience of this show, they were so much into Kento Miyahara winning back the title. And Kento Miyahara did his usual shtick of walking back, or pretending to walk back. And then the crowd chanted for him, and he turned around. But the chant wasn't loud enough yet. Crowd was getting even louder. And then he came back to hold his post-match speech there. So the crowd, the live crowd that they had, was very much into this. So for them, it was a big win.
Yeah,
for me, it felt a little bit flat. But
yeah.
I'm not their target audience. I'm just somebody buying All Japan Pro Wrestling TV. I'm not somebody buying an expensive ticket to the Saitama shows.
Yeah, but overall, I think there are still a lot of guests left in Joe's tank, even for the fans. I think Miyahara, and I think this also throws the Champions Carnival in flux a little bit, because now that, because I think everyone had pegged Kento as the winner to mm-hmm. set up him find the title back, but now as the champion, you know, I think that adds a little doubt on that. Actually, a good bit of doubt, in fact, I would say. But so what do you think of that then? Now that we have this, like I told you at the start, I think the crowd, he was the most over guy on the show. No, I don't hate this title switch. I just think there was more gas left in the tank, and I think they had a bigger story they could have gone with Kento. But now, what's done is done. The booking's all over the place in this company. Where do you think they go with the carnival now, since that's coming right up?
Wow. It's a difficult question. Well, who's winning this carnival? I'm not sure.
Yeah, exactly, because this throws all our predictions kind of, you know.
You know, they may actually go with Maro Fuji.
That's what I was thinking. Like, because I thought he would be in the finals anyway, and now this gives him an excuse to actually win. Like, you know, pretty much instead of putting over Miyahara. Because yeah. that was my finals pick, was Maro Fuji and Miyahara, and I thought Kento would win. But now with this, I think Maro Fuji has to be considered the favorite. A lot of people are pointing to Zeus, but we did that last year. Yeah, we did that last year, and we saw how that turned out.
Yep.
So I think Maro Fuji's going to win. I'm like you. I think he was my second pick, and I think he definitely has a shot to win this thing. And that'll be a big title match for All Japan to have him versus Kento. And I think that someone else should win Block A, too, to kind of... And it really fits into my storyline I had pegged all along, because I thought that Maro Fuji should lose two matches, one to Kento and one to a guy in Block B. Now I just think he should lose one big match against someone in Block B, to give that rub to someone else,
mm-hmm.
and maybe they can have a rematch in Noah, and that'll have, you know, that'll put Maro Fuji King's win back.
Yep.
So that's what I look forward to. Out of all the guys in Block B, who do you think would be best to get that win over Maro Fuji?
Let me look at Block B. I would love to see Kai getting that win.
That was my pick too. That's what I hope happens. I think he's primed for a sleeper tournament. And if he could get a win over Maro Fuji and let that be his only loss, I think that would be a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And really put him over. So I hope that happens.
Yeah. So on a more positive note, Dylan, the Champion Carnival is coming up. And half of the shows will actually be live on All Japan Pro Wrestling TV. That's AJPW.TV. It's going to be the Sendai show, the first show of the Champion Carnival. Then Fukuoka on April 15th. Osaka on April 20 and 21, Nagoya on April 22, and then the three Kurikan Hall shows on April 25, 29, and April 30. And the other shows will be presented as a VOD on All Japan Pro Wrestling TV. And as I'm looking on All Japan Pro Wrestling TV right now, they are slowly putting up more stuff. They now put up some matches from May 15, 2016 from Osaka. It was the All Japan Fan Appreciation Day show. And they have already put up matches from March 21st. That was the final show before this Saitama show we just reviewed. And on a positive note, the matches on that show were better. I already watched Joe Döring was in the match. Joe Döring and Kai versus Kento Miyahara and Yoshitatsu was a good 10-minute match, and they also put up the All Asia heavyweight title match. I'm sorry, between champion Roji Sai and Naoya Nomura. Just as good, or maybe not as great as their January Kurikan Hall match, but still a great match. Again, Roji Sai killing Naoya Nomura's midsection with kicks and stomps. So that's up on All Japan Pro Wrestling TV right now. It costs 900 yen a month, just like DDT Universe. And there isn't that much stuff up there yet, but luckily they are adding the stuff that happened 1 week ago, they are adding that stuff, and not like BJW Car, where you have to wait 2 months to get a Kurokanal show.
Let's not talk about BJW.
Yeah. So you will get a lot of live action in April for only 900 yen, which would be about $7 or $8, which is, especially for the Champion Carnival, that should turn a lot of heads towards All Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah, if there's any month you're going to get it, it's this one.
Yep.
So, yeah, you know, I think it's totally worth it. And really, their interface is basically the same as New Japan World,
yeah,
to be honest. They didn't get too creative with it. No. But if you can navigate New Japan World, you'll have no problems with this one.
Exactly. All right. I guess this is it for this week.
Yeah. Did we get any questions in the email or anything like
that?
No,
we didn't. But if you want to email us questions, you can always do that. That's just japan@mlw.com. And still in a lot of excitement in the world of MLW as the news broke that MLW is now having their own TV shows on Fridays, which is very exciting, I think. Wonder how that works out. And I think Kurt and all the crew, they have lots of good plans in work. And I'm really looking forward to watching that show.
Yeah, me too. It's on BN Sports Network, starting the 20th of April. Having guys like Penta, Fenix on there. Some big indie guys they had on there. I don't know how you worked out that deal, but everything in Lucha can be confusing sometimes. But Court navigated through it, and he's getting these guys on there. Some great talent. Some, you know, people like Shane Strickland, Jimmy Havoc's on there. So a lot of cool guys. Some of my favorites, like Aria Blake, Priscilla Kelly, on there too. So some of my favorite wrestlers of the indie scene. But lots of great talent in MLW right now. It should be a good show.
Definitely. And I also hope that you enjoyed this show that we did here, looking back at some of the big shows in Japan and in the US as well. So, from me to you, the listener, thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLW Radio Network.